Great. Thanks, Carrie. Pleasure to be here. As Carrie mentioned, I direct the Soybean Innovation Lab. It's a USAID Feed the Future lab. I want to acknowledge Carrie and Kristen as co-authors on this. This talk is about institution building. And for us at the lab, when we started, this theme of institution building was front and center, and really the synonym for this, or what we're really talking about, is the walkaway test. After 5 years, we're a five-year project, we may be renewed, so let's say after 10 years, when we walk away, how sustainable is what we've done? How sustainable are the institutions? And that's really who our customers are. We don't work with farmers, we work with institutions, organizations, to help them achieve their objectives, help them do better. And so the walkaway test is very, very important. So I'm going to talk a little bit about institution building as we know it, has our experience. First of all, I know nothing about institution building, and I would imagine most of you all were not trained in institution building. As an economist, that's just not part of the curriculum. Through my work and work through this, I think it's just so important, and I think we have to do a better job. I know I have to do a better job. This is really a critical area because we're going to fail the walkaway test unless we get this right. So I'll give you a little background of the lab, who we are, what we do, and then I'm going to just pick on, we have 10 business units within the lab because we're meant to cover the entire value chain, one of which is plant breeding and germplasm management. So I'm just going to focus on them, though there's institution building going on and we could focus on other research groups. This is just going to focus on plant breeding. So is institution building really important? It really is, because it's about sustainability. It's really the true, if you're successful, it really is about sustainability. We're 35 researchers plus in the U.S., and we have a, for everyone, there was a kind of a social contract that said all our work is going to be in Africa. We do no work at the bench here in the U.S. All our work is with partners supporting our practitioner partners. So we're quite different from other labs in that everything is forward. We started in 5 countries. We're now in 16. Stephen's comments, there's just tremendous demand for soybean. And it's a new crop, as Stephen so correctly pointed out. So this is new to institutions, to governments, to researchers, to extensionists, to the private sector, of course, to farmers. This is a new beast, and it's quite different from not only other crops, but other legumes as well. So the U of I is the lead, but our close partners are Missouri, Mississippi State, and IITA. So IITA is the CG center that has soybean as a crop, a mandate crop. We also continue to collaborate with the University of Georgia, Maryland Eastern Shore, and lots of local partners. So the overarching research question for the lab was, the hypothesis was soybeans an effective development crop. It hadn't been tested before. We didn't know the answer to that. A lot of us have worked, my research career was spent really focused in one particular part of the world, in Mato Grosso, Brazil, 15 years doing research there. It is shown in Latin America to be an effective development crop. It's highly productive, so it extricates farmers from the cycle of poverty, but it's also less well understood, but much more important, is that it has very high agro-industrial multipliers. That means it spins lots of jobs, spins lots of economic development, livestock, feed, biofuels, industrial inputs, does a lot of things, plus obviously human nutrition. So if it is an effective development crop, we want to understand what are the implications for smallholders, because it's non-trivial, especially smallholders and women. And if yes, what then are the technologies, processes, and systems to establish soybean? Again, implicit in that is sustainability, is the walkaway test, institutionally, to establish soybean in Africa, not to, to do an airdrop. Our approach, all our work and time is spent in Africa, in direct partnerships. It's just institution building, beating ourselves over the head, 24/7, all of these partners, whether they're NGOs, whether they're contractors, whether they're extensionists, whether it's our partners at IITA, the various NARs, we work in many countries, just lots of, whether it's USAID, lots of people that we are bringing and educating, training on this new beast called soybean for development. So it's really a practitioner extension and outreach program. How to move these institutions and organizations forward. And cash prize to anyone of what's going on, and that was just taken last week when I was in Ethiopia, what's going on that leaf. That's soybean rust. Big problem now, and this is, we can talk about soybean rust, that's just an interesting side note. Great photo there. So we're all over. We also have a project in Pakistan and Indonesia, and also we're in Haiti. This is a colleague, Brian Deers, put out for us on, certainly on cramp breeding and germplasm, it's all about yield. You see African average in the lower yellow lines, the gap is quite huge. We operate a program, a large project called a Smart Farm, a soybean agronomic research farm. We operate in a number of countries just with simple appropriate technologies. Good management practices, we're able to triple yields to 2,100 kilos per hectare. World average is about 2,300, and we know the tropical potential from our work in Latin America is equal to what we have in the U.S. at 3,000 plus. So the potential is there. Building the institutions to narrow that gap is the target. I'll give you some empirics just of what's going on in breeding, a couple of quick hitting kind of thoughts. This is the release pattern for the NARS in Malawi. You've got six varieties since 1993. There is not currently, there was an IITA breeder there, but there's not been a PhD breeding program in Malawi. I don't know, David and Stephen would know better whether ever, but certainly in recent times. The source material, it's really about selection from others. It's not really breeding as we know it going on. We have some yield data on these varieties that don't perform all that well compared to outside varieties, it's just not what this would be. What should capture your mind is about pace, and pace keeping up with what farmers need and what the industry needs, and pace is very, very slow. These are data from our Pan-African trials in Kenya. We have them for Malawi, but this is just more clear on what's going on. We brought in 42 different varieties. Just the fact that the Innovation Lab brought in 42 varieties, this doesn't happen. We don't see local varieties compared to what potentially is out there. So you don't get the effects of sunlight on breeders, on institutions, and say, hey, maybe we're not keeping up. So this is... these are data, and so you have 21, 22, down to 42. This is just from 1 year. This is not definitive. It's just a little snapshot that says There were seven local varieties from the NARS in Kenya, these yellow ones, and available to the industry and farmers. There are 14 other varieties that outperform the best local variety, and having access only to the local variety, you're denying yourself about 35% in yield potential. And I know Stephen should be very, very proud because that's coming from him. There's just a lot of good material out there. Okay. Institutions need to keep pace. So this is in the breeding world, breeding space. So what we're talking about, and I guess I should throw a note in here. I know this is the tropical legume section, so everyone should be fully aware, but just to make sure it's clear, soybeans, self-pollinated crop, not open pollinated, self-pollinated crop. So the private sector incentives are very weak here, and this is a whole nother topic we can discuss. So because of seed saving and brown bagging, so the public sector becomes very, very important with self-pollinated crops like soybean. And the public sector is, the private sector is very reticent to get in the game here. So we need to build these public sector institutions. So SIL, our plant breeding strategy, we have two approaches. One is institution building. It's long term. It's about the public, supporting the public sector, IITA and the NARS. So in each country, there is a National Ag Research program. It's very foundational. That's the design. So this is really meant to be sustainable, and we're trying to build these institutions so that when we walk away, they're able to deliver high volumes of new varieties that the industry needs. We also operate a short-term program. This is, I'm not going to talk about it here today, it's very fast track. This is our Pan-African soybean trials. We bring a lot of material. These are commercial varieties into countries. And it gets the soybean complex the seed it needs now to be productive and support the rapid growth of the feed industry. Everybody on the industry side says, I need seed now. I don't have time for institution building. Don't talk to me about that. The missions say, don't talk to me about that. Talk to me about this. So the industry wants this, but this is the sustainable part. This, in a sense, circumvents institutions. It's just bringing in material and is not building. Once you stop bringing in the material, the local system isn't there to fill the vacuum. Okay. So the plant breeding problem, the institutional problem, is about pace. Breeding is a numbers game. And the pace is way, way too slow at all of the various national programs. The volumes of materials being released, you saw in Malawi, six varieties since 1993. Volumes are extremely low, are non-functionally low. It's just you're not in the game. And the program size, when you actually get into the nitty-gritty of how many lines are you working with and the tens of lines when you should be working in the thousands of lines. These are very, very small. So they can't compete, can't keep pace with demand. So what do? We move lots of material in. We brought in lots of material to the various NARS and IITA as well. Breeding system productivity, you've got to be able to handle all that new material. Okay. And this is really very technical, ground level kind of work in equipment, infrastructure, machinery, mechanization, and then lots of webinars, training, and so forth. As software and training on software, just to pick up the pace, But there are deeper institutional drivers at play. The solution we've learned in this capacity building is not just in the tech transfer, in the training, the infrastructure, the equipment, the software. There's all these other things that say, why does a breeder not have tweezers? And we find this all over at the station. no screwdrivers. I mean, this isn't just because, oh, we could bring a screwdriver, we can bring tweezers. But this is deeper than that. This is much deeper in capacity building. So we got three things we think are going on to wrap up. We think that there's distorted governance. There is not a focus on the researchers. These organizations are very hierarchical, very heavy at administration, and very weak researcher incentives. So researchers are not celebrated. They're not the center of the station. There's also our lack at USAID, and I think a lot of us, our expertise, we're really not integrated into institutional operations. We work on a research project and so forth. We build human capacity and physical capacity, but we're not working on transforming the governance. We know about research station management. We know how to be productive, but we're not really part of the institutional. It's just not part of the grant. And then there's just the pure lack of investment in ag research. One of the most basic things that's missing that just stuns us, not just me, is about lack of connectivity. Access to the internet. The access to the internet is about researcher power and autonomy. It's about finding soft funding. It's about independence. It just unleashes everything. As one guy on our team said, this is the oxygen to capacity and growth. And cutting off researchers from the internet, I mean, every station we work with is unconnected. So just a basic lack of investment, and this just has to change in improving institutions. So these are our top three in institution building, a very, very complex sort of endeavor, very new to us, but very critical. So with that, I'll stop, and thanks.
Thank you. One quick question.
I really appreciate that last, in particular, announcement and your commitment to sustainability, which is about institutional. The reward structure is what I would call that first of all.
Yeah.
It's never been for researchers, and we have to say in the U.S. sometimes as a faculty member, I feel like most of them. But what? How do you? I agree with those. I've seen those since the early '90s in Africa. But how do we get them?
I'm moving. I don't know. I keep throwing out that I think it's, you know, like who's to blame? Like who's behind the curtain? Of, you know, who's Oz here? Who are we going to blame when we pull it back? I'm going to, right now, I'm blaming the donor. So I'm blaming, for example, the mission. They got a lot of money. They're not putting money into institutions. They need quick results. People are moving. I mean, there's a whole incentive.
Yeah, they say black holes put money.
Right. And so then there's that hard work, if you did get a commitment to institution, would say to put us and have it be an institutional issue, not just let's just bring new lines, new accessions in and get those cross made and bred and so on and so forth. But what about the institution itself? And we work with one station is very interesting is called JARC in Ethiopia, the Gemini Ag Research Center. And they got it going. I mean, they've got serious problems, but they're different. And so maybe learning, I'd love to try to figure out what they do, and maybe just an enlightened director or something. But being tied into these institutions, I think, is important.
Thank you all for coming. Thanks the speakers for speaking and the audience for showing up. And in 5 minutes, we have perennial grain crops starting in this room. So thank you all.